Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about understanding past climates through rings in stalactites, a Cosmos magazine article from December to January 2017, entitled Cracking the Secrets of Stalactites. Pauline Treble dives into Australia's caves to understand the climate, past, present and future. Sarah Scholes reports. Inside the Moondyne Cave on the southwest coast of Western Australia, stalactites hung in clusters from the ceiling. Delicate crystal straws, bristling stout organ pipes. Epid stalactites rise like pointy hats from the cave floor. So stalactites drop down, mites go up the top. In the early 20th century, Moondyne's ghostly structures attracted enough tourists that in 1911, cave managers installed a boardwalk to control the flow of people through the cave. In 1992, a local tour company ripped up the rotting floorboards to replace it with new timber. In the decommissioning, workers found that stalagmites about the size of a standard paperclip sprouting from a piece of old wood. They shelved the odd little souvenir, thinking it may someday be of use. They were right. In 2001, a doctoral student in the Australian National University named Pauline Treble visited the several caves in Western Australia looking for research samples. Treble thought of herself as an underground detective, a paleoclimatologist. She was studying caves as a way of reconstructing the Earth's past. A cave management employee pulled out the Moondyne splinter, with its co-joined stalagmite. Is that of any interest to you? Treble's eyes gleamed as she realised how special the stalagmite was. It was a cipher that could reveal how the 20th century climate had encoded itself into the formation of this hunk of mineral. Moondyne would later alter the course not just of Treble's project, but of her entire field. Caves store permanent records of the temperature and rainfall patterns. Rainwater filters through the ground, drips into the cave and evaporates, depositing minerals. Gradually, stalactites and stalagmites, collectively known as speleothems, build up their layers, like a drip castle kids construct beaches. The outside of each one is modern, but going just a few centimetres into the structure transports you back in time. These speleothems just sit there, quietly dripping away for thousands of years in the dark. Silent witnesses to climate and environmental changes going on around them, says Treble. Coaxing climatic history out of those silent witnesses depends on knowing exactly how far back in time a given layer goes. Scientists figure out the age of spelenderm samples using radioactive dating, usually on uranium that seeps into them as they grow. As uranium ages, it decays at regular predictable rate into thorium. By measuring how much uranium remains in a given spelotherm, relative to how much thorium has appeared, scientists can learn how old the sample is. The trouble is that radioactive dating is inherently fuzzy. Researchers can only approximate the age of a cave to within about 100 years. That's why the boardwalk spelotherm was so valuable. Treble knew when it had first started to grow. The boardwalk's 1911 grand opening was a kind of a birth certificate. She had the RIP date too, 1992, when the boardwalk was torn up. Treble could now check to see how well the known environmental conditions between 1911 and 1912 matched up with the speleoderm's chemical composition. She could determine whether, and if so, how speleoderms encrypted information about rainfall and climate. In the years since she stumbled on her boardwalk barnacle, Treble, now a research scientist at the Australian Nuclear Science and Technology Organisation, has become a preeminent cave paleoclimatologist, leading some of the world's longest-running cave monitoring programs. She's deduced how historical climate change has affected the rainfall in Australia and transformed the future and transformation future climate change is likely to bring. Her methods have also helped set a course of cave researchers examining shifting climates elsewhere in the world. Treble was a curious kid, and not unlike a cave herself, she observed, absorbed, and interpreted the environment around her. She still does in her work and her hobby. When she's not playing with her data or kids, she paints. She's just had her first exhibition, Portraits of Her Children, aged 7 and 9, and has moved on to still life. To reproduce a vase is all about careful observation, she says. That's the same with science. It's not going in with a biased idea of how the world should work. Trouble wasn't always keen on caves. When she was a child, her older brother was into spelunking. Seeing photographs of him on the underground adventures, she thought that would be terrifying. The idea of going beneath the earth's surface held no appeal. She did, though, discover a taste for climbing rocks. Scaling cliffs wasn't nearly as scary as venturing underground. At the University of Sydney, Treble started out in chemical engineering, but she discovered the geography department, and she was hooked. She was fascinated by the idea that it was possible to reconstruct the planet's past climate. When her professor showed her two Tasmanian spelothems and suggested that she could use them to look for evidence of ice ages, her future was clinched. Working with the Tasmanian spelothems led Treble underground for the first time. There, her childhood fear disappeared. Here was a fairyland of wall-to-wall crystal stalagmites so big they resembled fossilized trees. Beneath the Earth's surface, Treble felt safe. She liked getting to know a hidden part of the planet, her artist's eye eagerly to see the world beyond its surface level. While caves are geriatric, caves paleoclimatology is just Jen Exer, born in 1968, when New Zealand paleoclimatologists Chris Henley and Alexander Thomas Wilson published the first cave decoder manual, outlining how scientists could trace the history of surface climate from underground. At the time, there was very few terrestrial records you could reconstruct, says Treble. Tree rings tell some of the story, but trees are seldom old on a geological timescale. Ice cores are old, but primarily come from the Earth's far north and south. Caves are everywhere, and the insides are both very changeable and very, very old. Spelotherms encode information about the water that begat them. We think of water as having a straightforward formula, two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom, but in rainwater, oxygen normally comes from two main forms, isotopes that carry either 16 or 18 neutrons, like twins with slightly different weights. Generally, when the world is cooler, the rain contains more light oxygen relative to heavy oxygen. When it's warmer, oxygen 18 climbs up. As Henley and Wilson explained, that relationship between temperature and water chemistry means that scientists could reconstruct the history of a region's temperature fluctuations using spelotherms. If modern temperatures were shifting in a way that was out of proportion with past fluctuations, that most likely indicated as a human cause. Henley and Wilson's approach opened up a new era of climate research. Now scientists at sites all over the world could piece together clues right beneath their feet to better understand how the world once was and what it might become. Eventually, though, it became clear to Henley and Wilson's model was incomplete. It assumed that only factor that changed water's oxygen isotope composition was temperature. But other factors research were discovering also affected oxygen isotopes. The air mass above the inland, for example, they lose comparatively more heavy oxygen, and the rain they drop reflects that. Same thing happens as weather systems moved towards more extreme latitudes. By 1990, Strubble says, researchers suspected that spelotherms are actually archives of past rainfall rather than temperature. When more rain falls, the amount of oxygen 18 compared to oxygen 16 falls. In dry periods, heavy oxygen makes a comeback. Just how these shifts affect the makeup of the spelotherms is largely theoretical. Moondyne's Boardwalk Spelodome gave Treble a chance to test the theory against real rainfall patterns. Western Australia, the stalagmite home region, has seen 15% decrease in rainfall between 1970 and early 2000s. Now, Treble could test whether that dry period was reflected year to year in her spelotherms shifting oxygen isotopes. It was an opportunity not to miss. Stop, drop everything, she told herself. Focus on this. In the Moondyne spelotherm layers, she found clear evidence of annual cycles, different trace minerals deposited with predictable regularity as the calendar flipped forward. She could match the passing seasons to the chemical shifting concentrations, like matching a stack of photos to the dates they were taken by looking at clues such as snow on the ground, freshly mown grass, and autumn leaves. In speleoderms, the clues came from trace elements like magnesium, sodium, barium, and which changed with the seasons. And in the season subdivided, speleoderms could detect more than heavy oxygen appearing when the dry period began in the 1970s. And sure enough, it steadily rose as more precipitation fell. Treble recapitulates at that moment. "Yes, here it is," she says, throwing her fist into the air. Victory. Her real-world observation backed an idea that until then existed mostly on paper. She became the envy of her young colleagues who were struggling to find samples. At one conference after she presented her work, another student approached her. "That's my PhD," he said, visibly dejected, "and that's what I've been trying to do." "Oh, well," said Treble, "bad luck." Because academic positions in her field were scarce in Australia, in 2003, Treble accepted a post in the University of California, Los Angeles. But she always longed to return home. In my heart, I knew I had a great story for southwest of Western Australia, she says. "There's just no paleo records of that reason, and it's just dying to be done." That story, which she has continued to investigate ever since, was about how the westerly winds have evolved over a millennium and what effect that has had on Western Australia's water supply. The westerlies are responsible for what little precipitation Western Australia gets. But since around 1970s, these winds have shifted southward, taking the rain clouds with them. Scientists believe a number of factors could have contributed to the westerlies' migration, says Treble. Some of the variability is likely to be natural, and the ozone depletion around Antarctica has also probably played a role, she says. Scientists also theorize the westerly are sensitive to increases in greenhouse gases, whose concentration in the atmosphere continued to mount. Just how sensitive, though, is an open question. Treble's work on Western Australia caves is premised on the idea that if she can figure out just how changeable rainfall was throughout the region's history, as reflected by speleotherms, she can deduce how big an effect climate change has been given on the westerlies. That information could help shape forecasts how life in Australia might alter in the coming decades, how little winter water crops will get, for example, and how much water supply will be nearby Perth will dwindle. Will also feed into climate models of other scientists used to forecast the future climate shifts. Even while she was still at California, Treble believed such work could also make climate change real for people back home by revealing how global and long-term processes is playing out in here and now. This is one of the current problems with people struggling to understand the impact of climate change in their lives, says Treble. They're only seeing climate change and rainfall through one lifetime. They don't have appreciation of how much things could change, but caves hold a whole history of those changes within themselves. If only she could decode it, she began writing grants to return home. In 2005, with a grant from the Land and Water Australia, Treble set up what would become the world's longest cave monitoring program. The rocky formations of past climates, what the Rosetta Stone was to deciphering hieroglyphics. Troubles and colleagues can look for the seasonal and climatic signatures in older speleodern samples and understand when it rained and how hard and how far the westerlies wandered back then. The most extensive monitoring operation is a cave called Golgotha, about 20 kilometres north of Moondarm. The cave in this area beneath native vegetation rather than agricultural fields or private properties. That means Treble can study how caves such as Golgotha respond chemically to climate change in the absence of other human-made environmental influences. What's more, water penetrates the porous rocks in the region easily, building up speleoderms quickly and packing them with information about the recent world above. Treble's team is currently reconstructing the past 8,000 years of rainfall to build a baseline of how the rainfall and the westerlies have evolved long-term, and how the current dry period compares and what the future shifts in the wind might mean for Western Australia. Inside Golgotha, Treble's equipment is a constant presence. As much as the otherworldly stalactites and stalagmites can carry the cave's story, The site is a five-hour flight from Treble's home base near Sydney, and she only makes the trip there about once a year. Anne Wood and Elizabeth McGuire of the Department of Parks and Wildlife make sure the day-to-day data keep on coming. When Treble does scramble into the cave wearing full-body coveralls, her brown hair tied back and lamp beaming from her forehead, there is a military focus about her. Her collaborator Ian Fairchild at the University of Birmingham remembers a 10-day field trip he once took with Treble. The experience was intense. "Pauline is a bit of a stickler," Fairchild says. "We had to work every day and there was no stops. We were allowed some wine, I think, at the end of the day on the last day." He means stickler in a nice way. Pauline is certainly a careful scientist, very methodical, very high ethical values, he says. Where others could cut bureaucratic corners, she sticks to the book, monitoring drip sites for years to figure out which will be more scientifically useful, sending regulators documentation along the way and waiting for permission before taking physical samples. That quality, Fairchild says, has helped her keep in the good graces of the land management agencies that hold the keys to the underground castles. The massive Golgotha data set also attracts scientists from different interests. Some geostatisticians from the University of Lausanne and Western Sydney University recently offered to use lasers to make a 3D map of Golgotha's water paths. Terrell pounced on the opportunity. They had led to an important discovery. Where tree roots have cracked the rock at the surface, rainwater funnels into the cave below. But those same roots then change the composition of the water, sucking up nutrients, including the same trace minerals paleoclimatologists use for climate clues. If an oak tree happens to be grown directly above a speleoderm, it scrambles the story, and unscrambling it, as with an egg, isn't really possible. That, Treble realized, means that it's crucial to find speleoderms that are free from such blemishes. Tree roots aren't the only force of nature that can skew a reading, as Treble recently discovered. Take all readings at different Western Australian caves called Yonder Up. Treble couldn't see oxygen signature of the rainfall changes she knew occurred between 2005 and 2011. She shelved the Yonderop data, figuring the samples must have become contaminated, though by what she didn't know. But she did have a suspicion. A fire burned above Yarrabit in 2005. Somehow the fire must have affected the development of the cave formations, but how? She didn't get an answer until a few years later when, at the University of New South Wales, geoscientist student Gurintha Nagra approached her and her collaborator, Auntie Baker, in need of a project. They put the budding cave detective to work, finding out how a fire affected the water flows. Nagra, with the help of others in Treble's and Baker's group, discovered that when a fire burns above a cave, water evaporates at the higher rate. In response, the cave's heavy oxygen rises in a way that is, so far, indistinguishable from an increase due to rainfall changes. Cave sites that have sat silent under conflagrations then provide a blemished picture of the climate. Scientists don't know these imperfections exist, Treble says. They say the data, they see the data as smooth and simple. Temperature changes affect the water chemistry. The end. Treble has helped reveal just how many warts there are in the data. Her science imitates her art. By revealing the cave's imperfections, she has forced her field towards greater realism, just as detailing people's blemishes and hairs make them more human. Embracing the increasing gritty portrait of caves, Treble plans to keep probing the speleotherms to read the past, put the present in context, and help predict the future. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.